to the moderators, Harris and Moore, our presiding officer, Dr. Elmore, to this celestial conclave of clerics here gathered, to all of you, my sisters and brothers in the commonwealth of faith. I'm grateful again to our God and our Christ for this blessed privilege which is mine to stand once again, speak to you as he shall give me strength, his abiding and eternal word of life. And once again, from the outset, I want to express my gratitude for having been invited to come and to share with you in this week. And my own soul has been blessed as a result of passing this way. It is my prayer and it is my hope that somehow something has been said that will prove to be a source of strength and inspiration for you as you continue to labor in your respective fields week in and week out. This experience has allowed me also the privilege to renew several old acquaintances, and so I'm grateful for that privilege also. Reverend Carter, who gave me those words of introduction, demonstrated the kind of friend he is, however, when he said that if I had not... See, that's a friend for you. He's not the kind the brother was singing about that will stand by you. He just wants to stand in the limelight and descant a little of your glory. Nevertheless, I'm glad he revealed that side of himself. And I saw Brother Moore get up and leave out a moment ago. That last verse of that song was sung to comfort him. Growing old and feeble. Nevertheless, it's good to be here. I'm grateful to see all of my many friends again, and I dare not try to call off names, but it's a privilege to be here, and I trust and I pray that the same spirit which has prevailed up to this moment might take charge from henceforth, that all we say and do will be done and said to the glory and honor of our Christ. Would you bow and would you pray with me just now? Consecrate me now unto thy service, Lord, by the power of thy grace divine. Let my soul look up with a steadfast hope, and let my will be lost in thine. Amen. For our theme this morning, the subject is because of the pull of the world. And so to try to come at that theme, I want to turn your attention in the Divine Library to the book of 2 Kings. The book of 2 Kings, chapter 4, and verses 1 through 7, where we read these words. Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elisha, saying, Thy servant, my husband, is dead, and thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord. And the creditor is come to take unto him my two sons to be bondmen. And Elisha said unto her, What shall I do for thee? Tell me, what hast thou in the house? And she said, Thine handmaid hath not anything in the house, save a pot of oil. Then he said, Go borrow thee vessels abroad of all thy neighbors, even empty vessels, borrow not a few. And when thou art come in, thou shalt shut the door upon thee and upon thy sons, and shalt pour out into all those vessels, and thou shalt set aside that which is full. So she went from him and shut the door upon her and upon her sons who brought the vessels to her, and she poured out. And it came to pass, when the vessels were full, that she said unto her son, Bring me yet a vessel. And he said unto her, There is not a vessel more, and the oil stayed. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, Go sell the oil, and pay thy debt, and live thou and thy children of the rest. Let me walk down the corridors of your mind. I have a few thoughts I'd like to hang there. centered around this thing, from debt to dignity. From debt to dignity. There is no greater tragedy in all of life than to see a person dependent on someone else for their welfare and sustenance because they fail to learn how to stand up on their own two feet. And yet all around us, there are growing numbers of persons who have their hands stuck out because somewhere along the line, something has happened and they are not able to make it on their own. Of course, no one of us can afford to brag and boastfully talk about what we'll never do or what will never happen to us. We cannot talk too critically of others and hold them totally responsible for their plight, for none of us can ever predict what woeful set of circumstances may befall us before we complete our voyage to the other shore of existence. With all of the wonderful things that we can say about this beautiful blessing of life, it must be acknowledged that life is a precarious venture. There is no one of us who qualifies for immunity against the harsher realities of life. Bad times come to the good and bad, and good times in their turn come to us all. So we must be restrained by caution and humility when it comes to making a blanket indictment against those who line the streets of need. For not all of them are lazy and shiftless and irresponsible, as some people would have us believe. Some of them, God help, are, as we say in street jargon, just down on their luck. For some reason, they have fallen prey to hard times and hard circumstances. Walk humbly, my brethren, and bow reverently in thanksgiving at the altar of God, for it could happen to any one of us. On the other hand, there are some people who have been crippled for life because they were never taught, trained, or encouraged to stand up on their own. Some people have been made permanently dependent because they've always had everything done for them and have never had to assume any responsibility for themselves. These people have been trained to live on handouts and taught to expect people to do for them what in reality they ought to be able to do for themselves. Some people have been crippled to the point where they cannot even think for themselves. They capitulate to life because they're afraid for their individuality to emerge, or they don't want to run the risk of being unpopular or just plain different. And so they attach themselves to a stronger personality, and they allow this person to do all of their thinking and decision-making for them. They don't know how to dress until this person tells them how to dress. They have no opinion of their own about anything until this person gives them an opinion. This is probably the saddest and the cruelest situation that a person can be ensnarled in. For somewhere, someday, sometime, the arm they lean on will fail them, and they will be left without any knowledge of how to make it on their own. And yet, unfortunately, this is the situation which has pressured many people into predicaments and hopelessly entangled them in snares they would rather not be in. But left to stand on their own and then not knowing how to stand, they are forced to swallow their pride and stoop to do whatever is demanded of them just in order to have a meal. Without question, my brethren, the most important lesson to be learned in all of life is how to think for yourself and how to make it for yourself. When you can't make it for yourself, you just can't have that sense of pride and dignity and self-respect that's so essential in building and bolstering a healthy self-image. And conversely, when you know how to make it for yourself, you don't have to compromise your integrity. You don't have to be the tool of anybody's perverted desires. You don't have to disregard your own dignity just in order to have a meal. You can write your own ticket. You can live free of shame. You can establish your own agenda when you know how to stand up and make it for yourself. And God expects us to stand up and make it on our own. He has equipped each one of us with some innate ability to stand up in this trying contest of life. He does not intend for any of his children to be vulnerable to the moods and madness of others. He has given all of us something to win with, and he has left it up to each of us to so develop our capabilities that they not only serve humanity, but glorify him in the process. God is glorified when his children know how to stand up on their own two feet. He delights to see us walk with dignity, to run respectfully, and to mount up on eagle wings and soar against the bosom of heaven in the integrity of self-reliance. It's the function of good religion to tell men that God did not create us to be dependent, to be a slave to circumstance, to be a liability to ourselves and others around us. He has equipped each of us to stand up on our own and to help and to teach others how to stand up on their own. But so much of what parades and masquerades as authentic religion is more crippling than it is enabling. Some religion does nothing but major in teaching self-pity. It encourages their adherents to feel sorry for themselves and subtly brainwashes them into believing that there is some holy virtue in their wretched circumstance. It capitalizes on people who are frustrated in some area of their life and who feel that they have failed in one way or another. And it seeks to make them believe that all that's necessary is simply to come to church and shout it out. But listen, my brethren, frustration and failure are facts of life. Everybody experiences frustration, and everybody has failed at something. Healthy religion empowers people to rise above their frustrations and failures, to get up on their feet and improve their circumstances, all to the glory of God. It's a mighty poor God who always wants me to suffer until I manage to get to heaven. It's a mighty poor God who owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, and yet he can't put steak on my table sometimes. Well, the woman in our text was one who had not learned the valuable lesson of how to stand up on her own. For in the distant period of time in which she lived, a woman was regarded as the ward of her husband. Her welfare, her social standing, her personhood were all determined by her husband. It is, and it ought to be that way to a certain extent now, but in that day, a husband was responsible for his wife. And we can't emphasize that fact too often and none too strongly. A husband was responsible for his wife. You see, we need to be reminded of that fact because a generation of black men are growing up amongst us where our men are running out looking for a woman to take care of them. A man used to take pride and dignity in knowing that he was taking care of his family, but now there are new and questionable gauges of masculinity. Rather than competing with other men in masculine things, then it looks like our men are competing with women in feminine things. The woman goes to the beauty parlor to get her hair curled up, and the man goes to the beauty parlor to get his hair curled up. Our women wear rollers in their hair, and our men are so bold they're walking the street with rollers in their hair and little sandwich bags on their heads. It looks like our women are wearing more pants and looking more masculine, and our men are starting to wear dresses and look more feminine. And there's no dignity in all of this, my brethren. I don't care how cool and how macho and how up-to-date all of this stuff looks. There's just no dignity in being a soft, dainty, effeminate, cool fool. Let a woman be a woman, and let a man be a man. Well, a woman by social edict was dependent on her husband. She was regarded as his servant. Indeed, she was his property. She had no rights that her husband did not give her. And I don't know how old this couple was in the text or how long they had been married. They probably weren't too old because he is referred to as one of the sons of the prophets. This implies that he was a seminary student and was in school training for the ministry. They had two sons who had not yet come to manhood, but they were still dependent on their mother for their welfare. So this was probably just a young couple who were just getting started in life. I don't know what their circumstance had been, but like most of us, this man had made some debts. I'm sure that he made these debts being with the idea in mind that being youthful and strong, he would be around a long time to pay them off. But like the rest of us, this man didn't know that his time was limited. God took this man in the prime of his life. Without a word of warning, he was gone. You can be here today and you can be gone today. Yeah, this man was gone, and this left his wife in a desperate situation. Head over heels in debt, two sons depending on her, no husband to lean on, no knowledge of how to make it. This woman had her back pressed against the wall. And my brethren, if there's one thing that can pin your back against the wall like nothing else, it's debt. It's bad when you always robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's bad when you always got to borrow your way through life and never have anything to call your own. It's bad when people look up and hate to see you coming because they're tired of picking up the check for you. And black people are in debt in this life because we buy up everything, but we produce nothing. Debt had this woman's back pinned against the wall. She had no social security checks to look forward to. There was no insurance policy to cash in. There was no savings account to withdraw. She didn't have any money, and she didn't have any means of getting any. And the creditors were tired of being put off, and they were ready to exercise their prerogative and enslave her two sons. This woman had to have some help. And so she went to the one place where she felt she could get it. She didn't go to the First National Bank of Jericho. She went to see the prophet Elisha. And in his response, Elisha did more than get this woman out of debt. He helped this woman to help herself so she could live with dignity for the rest of her life. And that's what we need, my brethren. That's what the church has to do. The church has to develop a ministry that enables and inspires people to stand up on their own and that teaches people how to make it so they can move from debt to dignity, from shame to self-respect, and from dependency to self-reliance. Now come here and observe this text and see here in the first instance that Elisha didn't give the woman a handout. Now Elisha listened patiently and with a prophet's concern to the pitiful plight of the woman, and then he makes a statement which appears to be callous and insensitive in its intent. He asked the woman, "What shall I do for thee?" It's almost as if he's saying, "Well, what are you coming to me for? What do you want me to do about it?" Now, I'm sure this was not what the woman expected to hear. She had made it clear to remind Elisha that her husband had been his servant and that he was a man who feared the Lord. You see, in her mind, all of this religious talk was meant to make Elisha feel sorry for her and qualify her to receive a contribution from the benevolence fund. But hearing the story, then the prophet knew that an offering wouldn't have helped this woman. She needed to know how to take care of herself and her two sons so she could keep on living after the crisis was over. Elisha didn't give this woman a handout. You see, a handout was not her solution. She needed permanent sustenance and continuing support. A whole lot of people have been crippled for life because rather than being taught how to sustain themselves over the long run, a handout has come too easy and robbed them of their initiative and their desire to want to try to do anything to better themselves. A whole lot of people have gotten hooked on handouts because they've been too easy to come by. They get a little help to get over one crisis, only to realize that without any training and without any opportunity to get in it, that they still got to keep on living after the crisis is over, and before they realize that they're living from handout to handout. See, that's how a whole lot of our people have gotten trapped on the welfare road and lost their way back to dignity and self-respect. They drop out of high school as soon as they get old enough. They sponge off their parents for as long as they can. And when they can't do that anymore, they go job hunting and then get mad because society has not reserved a block of jobs for people who haven't prepared themselves to do anything. My brethren, we got to preach the message that if you want something out of life, you got to prepare yourself. The world doesn't know you are living just because you're here. We got to learn to postpone some things. We can't have everything at once. We got to postpone some of this good timing. We got to postpone some of this fancy free living. We got to postpone some of these premarital babies until we can afford it and lay a foundation for ourselves. Once you got the foundation laid, you got the rest of your life to have fun. Well, Elisha didn't give this woman a handout. He didn't give this woman a handout because he didn't want her to be dependent on the scraps that she received from sympathetic souls here and there. She deserved to be more than have that. She deserved to have her dignity intact. And you just can't have it, my brethren. You just can't have dignity, and you just can't have a sense of pride when you always got to have your hand stuck out asking people for something. He didn't want to get this woman started on handouts because he knew if he did, soon as he looked around, she'd be right back. A handout will help in an emergency situation. It'll help you over the short run, but you're going to need something to help you to make it over the long run. Life is no 100-yard dash. Life is a marathon race. You're going to have mountains to climb, and you got to figure a way to get from the bottom to the top. You're going to have dense midnights through which to pass, and you're going to have to figure out a way to produce light to see. You're going to have deep valleys in which to crawl, and you're going to have something to call on to get you through the top time. We got to tell our people that if you want something out of life, you got to prepare yourself. So get some religion in your heart, get some knowledge in your head, get a steel in your hand, and then pray and work, and then work and pray, and then pray and work, and then work and pray, and where work won't get it, prayer will, and where prayer won't get it, work will, and where neither prayer or work will get it, you forget it, because you don't need it anyhow. Come here. Come here. And observe in the second instance that he forced this woman to use her head. See, Elisha asked this woman, he said, what hast thou in the house? See, he was forcing this woman to use her head so she could get involved in helping herself. And a whole lot of people could vastly improve their dependent situation if they would just use their head and do a little creative thinking. And for some reason, it seemed like black folk would rather use our brains to think up something crooked and dirty so we can feel like we're getting over on somebody. We'd rather think up some low-down, illegitimate scheme that you got to go to jail for than to think up something you don't have to be ashamed of. My brother, we got to get it through to our young people that you can make honest money if you use your head. The brain has two gears on it. It's got backwards and forwards. It's got crooked and straight. And if you use it right, you can go forward in life in a straight way without going backwards in a crooked way. You can make honest money without being a crook. You can drive a Cadillac without selling dope. You can live in a nice house without trying to be a pimp. There is such a thing as a dignified hustle. All hustling ain't got to be crooked. In my city, I see these little boys at the grocery store and at the service station, and they want to carry your groceries to the car, or they want to pump your gas for you because they want to make a few honest pennies. And they have to be encouraged because there are no jobs anywhere else. And the only way they're going to ever learn and be encouraged is if we pat them on the back and tell them, go on and make kid with dignity. Elisha stood there and looked at this woman and said, now look here, woman. Now you got to make it with dignity. Now your husband is gone, and I'm sorry about that, but it's up to you to make it for you and your two sons. Now you're not the first single parent heading up a household, and you're not going to be the last. So look, woman, don't you start out here crying and begging. Use your head. Think, woman, what hast thou left in the house? The woman thought for a moment, and then she said, prophet, I don't have nothing left. I sold my TV and my component set shortly after the old man died. And I had a yard sale the other day and had to put my dishes and my furniture go. I don't have anything left in the house except. And Elisha said, except what? And she said, except a pot of oil. I fried chicken for the boys last night, and the oil is still in the pot. I ain't got nothing left but a pot of oil. This woman had undervalued her resources. See, she didn't think very much of that oil. And all of us, to some extent, are undervaluing our resources. We not as poor as we running around here pretending we are. We got some assets somewhere. When black folk didn't have all of these push-button conveniences we got, they knew how to take scraps and make what they needed. All of us got a pot of oil somewhere if we just stalk and think a little bit. We got some talents that we can pool. We got some skills. We got some abilities. Everybody's got a little pot of oil. God hadn't cheated black folk. He didn't pass out brains to everybody but us. We got to stop looking everywhere else for help and somebody to do something for us and start looking to ourselves. Women, stop running around here belittling yourself by looking for a man with money. You can make it without a man if you have to. A whole lot of us have been reared by mothers who didn't have nothing but their dignity and self-respect. Man, stop making yourself look bad. Laying around here on your back looking for a woman that's working, and stand up on your own two feet and be a man. If you meet somebody, get on out here in the street and tough it out. You can't get nowhere trying to use somebody. Use your head and what little bit you do have, and you can make it with dignity. You can't make it just trying to get over on somebody and be a slick, fancy Dan. Use your head. You can make it if you try. And if you try and if you're willing, God will help you to make it. Well, I know that is so because I was reared like that. My mama told me, son, if this world from you withholds of its silver and its gold, and you have to get along on meager fare, just remember in his word how he feeds the little bird. And take your burden to the Lord and leave it there. Come here. Observe in the final instance that he helped this woman to help herself. Now, Elisha said to the woman, go borrow some empty bottles from your neighbors and go home, you and your sons, and fill them up with that oil. See, he gave this woman a plan to help herself. And more than having something given to us, we need to have a plan to help ourselves. See, we do too much haphazard living. We do too much drifting from day to day. You need a plan. And then get on out here in the street and work your plan. And don't get frustrated because in the course of working your plan, you run into a wall. Go around the wall. Or climb over the wall. Or tunnel under the wall. Or break through the wall. Don't stop because you come to a wall. Get beyond the wall and keep on working your plan. Elisha told this woman, he said, let your sons bring you the bottles. And this was so that her sons would learn how to make it. And see, the only way our sons and daughters are going to know how to make it is if we teach them how to make it. See, we used to teach our children how to work for a living. Now they're so accustomed to having everything given to them, we can't even get them to work. Parents of big overgrown children got to send out and get a company to cut the grass and shovel the snow. They go out in the street and work all day and then come home and have to work. Children got their feet propped up on the table demanding dinner. And if you tell them to put their feet down, they'll turn around and curse you. See, they learned the wrong kind of four-letter words. I learned some four-letter words in my house. My mom and daddy taught me some four-letter words. They taught me work and iron and wash and cook. I learned some four-letter words.
them to make it was by taking what you got. And that's the problem we got now. There used to be a bond and a sense of kinship whenever you saw another black brother anywhere. But now it ain't the white man I'm so afraid of. I'm glad somebody's on the tower keeping an eye on him. But it's this brother out here in the street who's too lazy to work and think that the way for him to make it is taking what I work to get. That's what's got me uptight right now. The more I pour out, the more God pulls in. I tell you, the Lord will provide. He'll help you when you're trying to help yourself. He'll stretch that little paycheck until next payday. If you don't fix income, he'll let that be enough and still supply all of your needs. If you got a plan, he'll get in the plan. Commit your way unto the Lord. In all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct thy path. Oh, this woman had a dignity intact. Elisha had given her the plan, but essentially, this was something she had done for herself. And you always feel better about yourself when you do it for yourself. This woman paid off her debts and had a whole wad of money left. On the way back to the house, they passed a haberdashery. One of the boys said, Mama, can I get a Pierre Cardin suit? She said, no, boy. You get that when you can afford it. But come on here and let me show you what to do with money. She went on around the corner to the oil company and sat down and worked out a franchise and became the community oil supplier. She went in the back room and taught these boys the oil business. And when they learned it well enough, she turned it over to them. She left Detroit, where I'm from, and bought her a winter home in Florida. I wish you'd look at that woman now. She's standing so tall, got her head so high, she's stepping so broad, she's so proud. See, she moved from Dead Alley over to Dignity Street. She left Shame Road and moved to Self-Respect Boulevard. She gave up dependency and became self-reliant. Slow down. Let me ask you something, woman. How did you get yourself together like that? Well, it was like this, young man. You see, there was an old preacher in my hometown. And when I was weary and worn and blue, I went to see that old preacher. And he told me that the Lord will provide. That if I trust in the Lord, he'd make a way somehow. I took that preacher and his word. I stood up on God's word, and here I am. And my brethren, that's the message we've got to preach. It's still true that God wants us to make it. He doesn't want us forever begging and borrowing. He wants us to live with dignity, to stand tall with pride, and above all, to be a witness for him. Now, my brethren, I'm getting ready to take my seat. But let me ask you as I conclude the story. Look at the woman. Do you know her name? Look at her hair. All white with the wisdom of a century. Look at the pharaohs engraved upon her face, telling her life's sad story. Do you know that woman? I'll tell you who she is. Her name is Life. And these two boys were the progenitors of the whole human race. And one day all life and humankind was head over heels in debt. We had charged and overcharged on our grace account. The accountant in heaven said, man's bill is due. Mercy said, well, give an extension on my behalf. The accountant said, I'm sorry, but company policy says that the wages of sin is death. When God heard that, everything in heaven got quiet. The Father called one tall, bright angel, dispatched him into the seraphic spheres, and said, go up there and see if anybody is worthy. The angel came back with drooped wings as he reported. They've got sweet music, but nobody is worthy. He said, visit the nether regions. Check with Moses and see if he's worthy. The angel came back and said, he's stiff with the dust of the century. But just then, a lamb crept from under the altar, curled himself in a garment of flesh, went out to Calvary and died in my place. And just one drop of his sinless, debt-free blood paid the price. Hey, I don't know about you, but Jesus paid it all. All to him I owe. Sin had left a crimson stain.